Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And here Steve is, will be joining us shortly. In the meantime, let's take a look at some scores around the major leagues. Currently, Milwaukee is ahead of the Devil Rays, 5-0 at the bottom of the ninth. Philly is unfortunately losing to the Mets, 9-2. Houston is has a pretty commanding lead over the Oakland A's, 6-1 in the bottom of fourth. Don't forget, Pirates fans, your Pirates will be playing at 3:45 this evening. Also have the Seattle-Cleveland game to look forward to, as well as the Arizona-Cincinnati. Actually, they're currently in the top of the ninth, with Arizona leading 5-1. Washington has a commanding 4-1 lead in the bottom of the eighth over the Marlins. Also in store for later this evening, we do have the Angels and Orioles at 7, as well as the Chicago White Sox in Detroit, also at 7, as well as the Colorado-Chicago Cubs, later at 8 o'clock this evening. The other remaining games for the rest of this evening, the St. Louis Cardinals will be facing the San Diego Padres at 10, and the Braves and Dodgers will also be their game starting at 10 for this evening. And lastly, the New York Yankees and Texas Rangers will be at 8 p.m.
Yes, but the big thing is, who gets John Lester?
Dun, dun, dun.
Who gets John Lester? The Pirates are in the running for John Lester in exchange for the entire Pirates team. Now, you'll also get $20,000 cash, two Eskimos, and a kangaroo. All right. Justin Masterson was traded today. We're going to hear from Adam Rittenberg, by the way, of ESPN.com next half hour. Talk to him about Big Ten Media Days. Get his take on everything. And that'll be interesting to hear from him in just a few minutes. But the big thing is what to do or what's going to happen with John Lester. And it's interesting that the top three left-handers in the game today, David Price, Cole Hamels, and John Lester, are all on the block. Okay? Think of that. The top three left-handed pitchers in the game today are allegedly all on the block at the same time. The Red Sox allegedly are asking for, quote, according to Gordon Eads of ESPN.com, formerly of the Boston Globe, for a, quote, king's ransom for Lester. King's ransom.
How many zeros do you think a king's ransom has, Steve?
well, the last time I heard the words king's ransom, Roger was trying to negotiate with Kevin about this show. Kevin eventually did give Roger a king's ransom. Stand. No, I'm just kidding. it was too easy. All right. Give me credit, Kyle. You picked up on that one right away. That was good.
Hey, you know, you gotta catch them when you can. That was perfect.
Just try to set it up. But that is the story. For Pirate fans, you gotta do the give credit where credit is due deal, because even if it doesn't work, at least they're trying. That's what I like, is the fact that they are trying to do something. I find that to be the key part to all of this. And if they get him, great. If they get him, great. Because I think it will give them the kind of big game pitcher that swings series and also swings postseason. This is the guy you give the ball to in games one and game five. I mean, that's who gets the ball. Game one, game five.
Now, would you say, Steve, that he, for all the teams that are vying for him, do you think the Pirates are one of the top candidates that if they're able to add him to the roster, they could maybe take that next step closer to postseason and World Series?
No question. Francisco Liriano pitched really well again last night in beating the Giants 3-1. Now, he hit the Giants at just the right time, Kyle.
Sure.
Because the Giants right now are doing nothing. What's interesting, the Giants are doing nothing offensively, and they're doing nothing offensively at home. They're down 2 runs per game at home right now.
Wow.
regardless of that, the Pirates still went out, beat him, and he pitched great. He pitched 7 innings last night. I listened to some of the game. He struck out, I think he struck out 11. I think he struck out 11 last night. And Tony Watson and Mark Melancon finished out. But Liriano is idealistically a number 2 or number 3 starter. Idealistically. Lester, Price, Hamill, and Hamels are all ones. Having a number one starter is an incredible luxury to have. To have a number one starter. St. Louis has one in Adam Wainwright. The Dodgers have Clayton Kershaw and then have the perfect number two in Zach Greinke. That's acquiring him would do that, would give them a number one, especially a guy that in postseason play has been there, and not only has been there, but has been outstanding when he's been there. Hasn't always been perfect. I think, 2009, didn't have a great postseason, something like that. But he'd be the kind of guy that if you desire to get to the promised land, he will, your best shot of getting there is going to be with him.
Well, and I would definitely say having that kind of a 1-2 punch power of pitching is fantastic. I mean, the one example that comes to my mind is the early Diamondbacks when they had Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson, and it was just
right.
They were such a 1-2 punch that no wonder they won the World Series.
Well, exactly, and that's what you're looking for. The Red Sox last year had, during the regular season, Lester, Lackey, and Buchholz, and then finally Buchholz finally got hurt. When they got to the postseason, and they acquired Peavy along the way too, when they got to the postseason, you had Lester and Lackey going back-to-back. So you knew that in four of, if you're on a 6-game series, in 4 of your 6 games, you've got Lester and Lackey. Okay, now tell me how you're losing that series on the mound. You're not. And that's what you're looking for. The Dodgers, who now are, 13 games over 500? The Dodgers now have Kershaw and Greinke. Now, last year, Kershaw in the playoffs was no better than okay. As much as everyone goes on and on and on about Kershaw, when the money was on the table, he was okay. He wanted the ball, but he was okay. Okay, Lester takes the ball, deciding game, 2007 World Series. Oh, shut out into the sixth. World Series Cardinals 2013, shut out again. Then gives up a run in his second start. Okay. These are the biggest games of your career. You can win all the games you want against the Mets. That's why when I talk about, you know, a difference maker is the guy that performs when the money's on the table, it's where the biggest pressure is. I mean, you sit, you have self-imposed pressure when you do your job. Anybody does. But it's at the biggest moments as to how you react. And you're impervious to it. Because take, for example, you as a fan watching the game. Right? The Phillies in 2008 are playing the Mets. Okay? Well, you got to win the game, but you're still, like, you're into it, but, you know, it's also 1-162. How many of you sat there when Cole Hamels took the ball and you were on the edge of your seats when they were playing Tampa Bay on every single pitch? Remember that feeling you had in 2008 where every pitch meant something? We, as a team, have not won it since 1980. It's been 28 years. Every single pitch, you were living, dying, breathing on every one of them. That's why it's important to look at guys who perform with the money on the table. You can be a 15, 16, 17 game winner and have a whole bunch of them be against Colorado. Nothing wrong with being a 16, 17 game winner. That keeps you in the league a long time. But the people that ascend to a different level are the ones where every pitch and the entire ballpark and anybody watching on TV, they're glued and locked in because it's that big and you're handling it as if it's June or July. That's special. That's what everybody, that's why when we talk about number one starters, we talk about money on the table, things like that. And we were talking about Andy Dalton last week. Why Andy Dalton is not... Andy Dalton has won with Cincinnati. Cincinnati's been a winner since he's been the quarterback, but nobody has a lot of confidence in him because when the money's been on the table, a.k.a. the postseason, he has performed poorly every time. That's why he can't sit there and talk about any kind of elite status because when the money's on the table, the only status he has is on his back. Making mistakes and so forth. Mistakes that he doesn't make in September and October, he makes in January. Well, that's big. And that's why when we look at, for example, when I talk about a John Lester and you talk about the Pirates staff, he's done things nobody on that staff has ever done. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com, coming up in the next half hour. Talk about Big Ten Media Day, about Penn State. All that and more coming up. Today's show comes to you from the Sunbury Motors Studio. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kyle and I and Bob Buhner, big shout out to Kevin Hur and the Grand Caymans. Tell everybody at the bank we said hi.
The man's enjoying his birthday. Can't blame him.
Today's his birthday?
It is indeed.
He took the day off for his birthday?
Are you surprised?
Time to man up. Really, who does that? Who takes their birthday off? It's not a holiday.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we welcome you to the Sunbury Motors Studio, 800-795-9565. 800-795-9565. After yesterday's interesting conversation we had with fans across the area, the phones lit up talking about whether or not to schedule an FCS team on your schedule. Found it to be an intriguing conversation hearing the different responses. Big Ten Media Days have concluded in Chicago. Very pleased to be joined by someone who's a good friend of the show and someone I have great respect for, Adam Rittenberg of ESPN.com. Hi, Adam.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
All right. What was your feel? I mean, normally these are not big news days in terms of the news of it coming out, but there's a lot of information that comes out. So what information did you dole out of it that you thought was important over 2 days?
Well, I thought it was interesting how welcoming Big Ten players and coaches are of the college football playoff. You know, as you know, the knock on the Big Ten for years has been they're too provincial and looking at the Rose Bowl as the be-all and end-all and not aiming higher towards the national championship. But I was encouraged by what I heard from coaches and players that hey, if you're not in the playoff at this conference, especially with the beating that it's taken nationally in the last decade or so, you are irrelevant, and we all need to be striving towards that. And, you know, Pat Fitzgerald from Northwestern, Randy Edsall from Maryland, talking about how the playoff system opens the doors for maybe some of the non-traditional powers, the teams that are less likely to be ranked preseason and discussed preseason, because it doesn't really matter what's said and talked about now. It really matters what happens on the field in the first 2 months of the season. So that was good, and there's some tidbits. Braxton Miller seemingly ahead of schedule on his recovering from his shoulder surgery, and I think for the most part teams are healthy entering the year, which is always a good thing.
What kind of feel did you get about Maryland and Rutgers?
Well, you know, I think it was good for them to experience the Big Ten spectacle and the stage and all the folks that are in Chicago for this event. And I think for the media, it was good to get to know Randy Edsall and his players. Same with Kyle Flood and his players. And yeah, I think Rutgers actually is a team from a style standpoint that should fit right into the Big Ten, the way they go about it with schemes on both sides of the ball. And you know, Maryland, I think, is a mystery team. They haven't really been healthy for a couple of years under Randy Edsall, and some of the players he brought to Chicago, quarterback C.J. Brown and Stephon Diggs, both have dealt with major injuries. And so we don't really know what the potential is when this team is in one piece. And they return quite a few starters, I think maybe the most in the Big Ten. They have, I think, the best receiving core in the conference, right, led by Stephon Diggs and Deion Long. And I think they could surprise some folks in the East Division if they can avoid the injury bug.
Yeah, at one point, Randy, a couple of years ago, had to play a linebacker at quarterback. I mean, that tells you that you may be banged up. The next part of this is that some of the more important press conferences over the past 2 weeks have been from the conference commissioners. Jim Delaney is always going to be listened to when he speaks. College intercollegiate athletics seems to have lost the narrative on the collegiate sports model, which Mark Emmert incorrectly calls amateur sports. Have they done a better job of seizing a little bit of the ground back on the narrative, or have they lost so much ground they're just treading water with it?
Yeah, again, different messages from different commissioners. And actually, you asked me something that I was surprised about. I think I was surprised that Jim didn't make much of a splash during his address. You know, if you think about last year, he outlined a 4-point proposal to reform college athletics, really before a lot of this was hitting the fan, lawsuits and unionization, and he's always been ahead of the curve on things. He was the last commissioner to go in this round of media days and didn't really have much powerful statements to say on Monday, which was a bit of a surprise. But I think there's just mixed messages depending on whether you listen to Mike's Live about the big conferences potentially branching off, and Bob Bowlsby saying it's, you know, doomsday with cheating, and Larry Scott says everything is great. So it is hard. I think they have lost the narrative, as you said, in trying to protect the collegiate model, and we'll see what happens with the ruling in the O'Bannon case and some of these other lawsuits, because it is definitely a time of pivotal change in college sports.
James Franklin's a dynamic personality who's always going to win the press conference. What kind of splash did he make in Chicago?
Yeah, he was really refreshing, Steve. I mean, again, you know, it's nothing against the Big Ten coaches, but it's kind of a decaffeinated bunch when you're around them. And then you get Franklin and so much energy. And
yeah,
whether he's talking about you know, Herb Hand and watching Chopped on the bus while they were guest coaching in Florida and Georgia to recruiting, to quarterback play, he had a conversation with our my colleague Josh Moyer about head shaving and the best practices for head shaving. So he is a dynamic guy, interested in a lot of things. definitely magnetic and had a constant crowd around him during those couple days in Chicago, and then today, obviously, during the ESPN car wash. And I think James, just from listening to him today especially, is tempering some of the expectations for year one. Mm-hmm. He recognizes some of the challenges on the roster that he inherits at Penn State, but with the success they've had on the recruiting trail and his energy, you would think that they're going to be at least in a position to compete for division and league championships in the near future.
Well, Michigan, for example, had 76 athletes on scholarship during spring practice. Penn State's going to have 72 for the season. So, yeah, I can see why he'd temper it just a bit. Sandy, direct on. You tuned out some interesting information about the process. In turn, what did you find out, Adam?
Well, again, I'm sure you and some other folks were a little surprised that it ended with Sandy Barber, although I think after Jim Phillips from Northwestern, he didn't really know who Penn State was pursuing. I know they pursued Jim Phillips hard, and I know that the new president at Penn State had wanted him at Florida State for their vacancy, AD vacancy, a couple years ago. Jim had already passed up, I think, the gold standard of AD jobs at Stanford a couple years ago as well, and they made a strong push for him, and he decided to stay put at Northwestern and see some of the things that they're doing through, including a new facilities upgrade for football on Lake Michigan. But after that, it was kind of a mystery. And you know, Sandy Barber is somebody who, when she got the Cal job, was really a rising star in the profession coming out of Notre Dame. She'd been AD at Tulane, one of the many Kevin White proteges out there, and had a pretty good start to her tenure at Cal. And unfortunately, there were some things towards the end that cast her and the program in a bit of a negative light as far as the struggles with facilities and the coaching change and the APR things. And I think she's definitely in a much better spot in Penn State, despite what's happened there in recent years, to grow that program and improve that program.
Right. And I think now with the – she won't have her hands tied like the California state system will tie hands. And it's nothing against the California state system, but facts are facts. I mean, a lot comes out of Sacramento that can tie a lot of hands from the chancellor all the way down to an athletic director. Let's get to the sanctions against Penn State. There have been a lot of rumblings now for a year about the possibility that the door could be open to Penn State going to a bowl maybe this year. I mean, but it's only speculation. I doubt you've really heard anything, because I know a lot of people here probably haven't heard anything because it's probably kept in-house. But what's your opinion on it?
Yeah, I've always thought it wouldn't get to 4 years. And even before last year, there was some talk that there would be a reduction as long as Penn State had no sort of major issues with George Mitchell and some of the compliance things he was tracking. And again, all the reports have been positive for Penn State. I know another one's coming up, and you could see a reduction in those historic sanctions. But again, this has sort of been discussed for a year, and we don't know if it's going to happen or not. It's kind of a tough position for the coaches to be in, because they can't tell recruits that, hey, we're going to be okay maybe this year or after this season. But I think it's something that's certainly not worth you can't write it off, that there is a possibility, I think, with all this smoke that Penn State could be off of that bowl ban perhaps as early as this season.
How important would it be, Adam, for Penn State to find out before September 12th? And here's my reasoning behind that date in my head. Penn State opens the Big Ten season on the 13th. If they're allowed, if say they things work out and everything falls into place and they're allowed to go to a bowl game, that also would mean they're eligible to play for the Big Ten championship. Shouldn't a team and a coaching staff know what they're allowed to do before they play their first conference game?
Well, yeah, that would certainly be nice for them to know that, but there's another school of thought that says you try to win every game, and it shouldn't matter whether you're eligible or not. You need to go out there and do everything you can to beat Rutgers, and that's an important game for Penn State because of the amount of recruiting battles that they're going to engage with Rutgers and with prospects in the state of New Jersey. The same thing with right. The Maryland game. And you need to win that game this year,
right.
Regardless of whether you're playing for a championship or not. But, yeah, it would definitely be nice to have an answer one way or the other sooner rather than later. But I think Penn State and James Franklin, knowing him and getting to know some of his coaches, they are going to try to win every game this season, even if they can only play 12.
Well, Actually, that's been the mentality here for the last 2 years, Adam. So, the mentality is that's how they've won 15 games, because they've literally taken everything seriously about each and every week. I'm just saying, from a knowledge point of view, it would be nice to know before you play your first conference game what you're eligible for. Without a doubt.
And again, it would change potentially the East Division race. I mean, we're talking about Michigan State and Ohio State, obviously at the top of that division, and can Michigan rise up? And Penn State's a team that, if they can stay healthy with these new coaches, maybe they can be a factor. Right now, they're not because they're not eligible.
Right.
But what type of boost would that give them if they can find that out right before the start of Big Ten play, and then they know that they are competing for not just a division championship, which you can win, but a league championship, and it would be a great. Boost of energy for Penn State with the Big Ten schedule on tap.
Steve Spurrier always refers to July as the talking season. That's always been his term for it. How glad are you that the talking season is over with and the practice season and the game season is about to begin?
Absolutely. It's always a fun time of year. We're right on the verge of the start of practices. Some teams may already be on the practice field. A lot of teams are reporting tomorrow or over the weekend, and it is exciting to see how these teams are going to look in practice and leading up to the first game. And there is quite a bit of mystery around the Big Ten. It seems like Penn State and Michigan, are they going to be better up front on the offensive line? How is Doug Nussmeier going to impact them going forward? So Iowa is a team people are talking about. Wisconsin has a lot of question marks, and it's just always great to get on the field and start evaluating these teams a little bit better before we get to the start of the season in late August.
Adam, you're around, obviously, in Chicago, and because of that, there's some connection that it's probably easier for you to just even go over and talk to Northwestern people. Pat Fitzgerald was the first to admit that, hey, look, we didn't handle adversity well last year, and they ended up 5-7. And they've had some good years recently, so that's been unusual. He says that the NLRB vote that they had and that they had to go through on unionization actually brought them closer. Are you a believer in that? Did that do that?
Well, again, I think it's going to be kind of a wait-and-see type thing with that, because they haven't faced any on-field adversity as a team. That's normally when you find out whether a team is together or not. That first game and things are maybe going against them, are they going to bind together and find a way to win, which they did incredibly well during the first part of Fitz's tenure. They were in a ton of close games, and really the stats show that they should have lost more of those games than they won, and the tables have kind of turned on them the last couple of seasons, especially last year, and they haven't been as strong in those tight games. So I think that's when we're really going to find out. The vote is expected to be a no, even if they're allowed to unseal those ballots, and I think most of the players are aware of that, but there clearly was some disagreement, and some players voted yes, and we're going to find out more about what this team is made of when they're in an adverse situation. But I think they have good leadership, and that's important. Trevor Siemian really taking control at quarterback. You look at Venerick Mark, who is also anti-union at running back. He's a leader on that team. Defensively, they have some pretty good leaders as well, whether they voted yes or no. So it's going to be really up to those guys to put the union issue behind them and make sure that this team stays together in those tough situations, or they're going to have a repeat of last year.
Just one quick question about that, and this will be the last one to ask you so I can let you go. Did Kane Coulter have a problem with how he was handled over 4 years by Pat Fitzgerald and Northwestern? I'm just asking to ask, since you're around it enough.
No, not at all. Kane actually went out of his way to say that he had a great experience at Northwestern. He was kind of put in a position, I believe, by Kappa when he was testifying, that he had to go out and try to make some points of why he maybe wasn't allowed the full student athlete experience. But he had a great internship opportunity there at Goldman Sachs. I think he has good relationships with the players and coaches on that team, and really seemed to be enjoying his time there. So he had to come out in some ways as an antagonist against Northwestern, but I think overall, even afterward, he said he really enjoyed that experience. It just happened to be that he was the test case, and Northwestern was the test case for this type of movement, and there probably will be other players who enjoyed their experience that are going to be put in positions where they have to speak out because they believe that ultimately is the path to a better overall situation for college athletes.
That's why I asked. Figured you'd know. Thanks so much, Adam. As always, informative, and always enjoy your work and look forward to seeing you at practice.
You bet. Thanks, Steve.
That's Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us. That was interesting what he said about Jim Delaney, because we played Jim Delaney's press conference and also his opening statement. And that's what also struck me. I was actually surprised that he wasn't more forceful about what he said about the current collegiate model. And so forth. I mean, because using the words amateur sports is, again, you can't do that. You can't go that route. I mean, that's pie in the sky stuff. I mean, that's stuff that Avery Brundage tried to pull on everybody back in 1970 and 72. That's antiquated. I mean, the amateur sports model doesn't exist. For goodness sakes, people run the Boston Marathon. Now the first, I don't know, their appearance fees in the first, 15 to 30 finishers all get cash. I mean, amateur sports? Hey, this is not semi-professional. It's absolutely not professional. But you are getting something for your as a player, whether you're a good player or you're not a good player. You're getting money in your name that is paying for your tuition, money that's in your name that's going to pay for your food, money that's in your name to buy your books, money that's in your name to pay for your housing. I mean, that's what, you know, so it's not, so you aren't, so these guys are not amateurs. They are not amateurs. The only true amateurs out there are the walk-ons who have, you know, now the meal plans changed, but up until now had to pay for their own meals, had to pay for their, you know, have to pay for their housing, have to pay for their tuition, have to pay for their books. They do it with loans. They do it through their parents. They do it, you know, there's a variety of ways they do it. All the clever ways that each and every one of you had to go through to pay for college. And how many of you, of course, walked out debt-free? And that's the big part here. People will walk out. If you're a student athlete on a full scholarship and you do it right, you should walk out completely debt-free. When we were younger, the college loan debt came out to the equivalent of a car payment. Now you come out of college and the debt is equivalent to that of a monthly mortgage payment. Just the way it is. And everyone knows it. I know some people here were talking about, well, it's because students stay so long. If you go to school 3.5 years and get your degree, you still walk out with a mound of debt. You still had to pay 7 semesters worth of tuition and had to take out 7 semesters worth of loan. So even if you graduate in 3.5 years, a semester ahead of time on the clock, you still walk out with debt. Not as much debt as somebody who went 5.5 years, but you still walk out with a lot of debt. It's just the way it is with college today and the way the current college loan system's set up. So student athletes, especially those on full scholarship, they know they're getting a great deal. But the people who lead all of this have to do a far better job of articulating what the deal is.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.